visit a land like no other. An extraordinary land where you can lose yourself and be who you want to be. Escape to Wonder.Land.
Vodafone, proudly supporting Wonder.Land. A brand new musical with music from Damon Albarn. Book tickets now at nationaltheatre.org.uk. Vodafone. Power to you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a special edition of the Dr. Keith / Goodwill Wrestling. This is Rob Naylor as usual, and we got a pretty awesome show scheduled today. Got a special guest who we'll be calling in momentarily. But first, I will introduce my co-hosts, at least one of them for now. Will, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good, Rob. And we also do have Alan on the line, just so you know.
Hell yes, we got Alan for life. Our correspondent over there in Irish country. How's it going, buddy?
Not too bad. I am just back from my friend's house where I was watching the Headshrinkers win the tag team titles from the Quebecers.
And why not?
And,
you know what? I forgot that
and
even
the
happened.
The sumo match between Earthquake and Yokozuna as well. Along with the best of Raw DVD. It's pretty great.
Dude, Earthquake against Yoko was awesome. So that's on the actual Best of Raw DVD, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When did that come out?
Well, hey, fellas, hey, I would love to talk about the Best of Raw, but Rob, why don't you introduce our guest host?
Oh, okay. We got our guest host right now. You might know her as the First Lady of Pro Wrestling, the Walking Riot herself. Missy Hyatt's here to join us to talk about World Class in the Old Mid-South. Missy, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great.
Pleasure to have you on. This is a long time in the making. We definitely want to discuss a whole bunch of the good days of wrestling, so to speak. Anyone, Will, you want to open up with a question?
Sure. Missy, my first memories of watching you were in World Class, and it's one of my favorite territories as a native Texan. You know, I grew up on it, and you can't mention World Class without mentioning the Von Erichs.
Definitely.
Rob and Alan, you know, they're on the other, well, Alan's halfway across the world, and Rob is up there in the Northeast in a, you know, McMahon country. So I don't know if he really knows how huge the Von Erichs were in Texas. And I think that was still going on when you were there. Can you just kind of give the people a sense of just how huge it was to be around the Von Erichs at the time?
Well, all I know is, like, Carrie, even Kevin, that all of it, they were like superstars, like rock gods. They would go, I mean, people would be crazy, especially even when we went to Israel. I mean, people following the vans and just going crazy for the Von Erichs and doing the Hook'em Horns of Texas. That's what was amazing to me is the Israeli people, you know, showing the Hook'em Horns, going, we love you, Von Erichs. And, I mean, but Carrie and Kevin, they were like superstars. They really were.
Yeah.
See all the people like at the Cotton Bowl. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, just like at the Cotton Bowl Stadium. I mean, I've never worked crowds like that before. It was unbelievable. Just the excitement and the thrill of it was the best place to ever start working. But I mean, everything else was kind of downhill after that. So.
Were you there when Kabuki was there?
Yes, I was there when Kabuki was there.
Yeah, I love Kabuki. Like, I always liked his backstory. Like, you know, he was in the he raked his face in the coals, and he was disfigurement, and now he's going to bring pain to everyone. Like, he scared the shit out of me as a child. I cannot lie. Like, if I was in the locker room across from him, I'd have been running. And how about, like, okay, the Sportatorium, right? That whole venue, that building, I, unfortunately, as Will said, I've never been down to Texas, so I don't know about all this, but Sportatorium at the building, what'd you think of that place?
It was wonderful, and, you know, I hate it that they say now in wrestling that they, you know, it's hard to, you know, drop every week or, you know, the television ratings every week, which that's wrong because we used to wrestle every Friday night in the same building in Dallas and every Monday in Fort Worth, which was 30 miles away, and we drew crowds. Mm-hmm. And they I think it has how many, I forget, it was 100 and something weeks they drew sellouts every Friday night.
Wow.
And if you can make people get in their car and drive and go pay to see it when it's on television too, then that means wrestling's hot, and it was hot down there. It was awesome.
Yeah, and it was also hot on Fridays. In Texas,
well, that was
when
it was, Friday night, Sportatorium.
Yeah, and, like, football's huge down there, like high school football and whatnot. So, like, that's even more impressive that you guys just were ridiculously always selling out, like, time and time again. And it went on for many, many years.
Yes, it was great.
Now,
hey,
Missy.
Go ahead,
I'm
Will.
Sorry, Alan. Say your intro. Go for it.
Yeah. Hey, Missy. How you doing? It's Alan.
Hi.
Now, Missy, I am working at a client at the moment. My client's name is, of course, Michael Hayes, and I have been trying to get him to watch YouTube videos of the Freebirds over the last week. And it may be unprofessional on my behalf, but I'm going to get that done. And,
let me tell you something. I just got done watching all the Mid-South stuff with the Freebirds. And you know what? It is more relevant and it is more exciting now than anything on wrestling, than anything. And we were watching you know, in succession. And we were watching, you know, when the Freebirds, you know, came to Mid-South and then the things that they did. And, I mean, listen, I got into wrestling because of the Freebirds. So... to me, the
That's
Freebirds.
That's what I was going to ask you, kind of what you thought about them, like, before.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you. Every time I can't even hear Leonard Skinner Freebird, because then just I have to, like, stop the car and wipe my brow because I think of friggin' Michael Hayes and Michael P.S. Hayes and Terry Bam Bam Gordy and my favorite Buddy Roberts. I mean, if there is one, I mean, I don't know if it's really a tag team or three-man, but they are, in my opinion, the best ever. I mean, I discovered wrestling by seeing them on TV, and that's what made me fall in love and want to be in wrestling, was seeing Terry Bam Bam Gordy and Michael Hayes in the wrestling ring. And that's what got me hooked on wrestling. So I guess I'm a little, you know, biased.
You don't need to defend that.
Go ahead, Will. Hey, cool, awesome. Freebirds are my favorite team, too. Like you said, Michael Hayes is just so freaking cool. And, like, David Lee Roth was my favorite rock singer at the time as a child. And, like, Michael Hayes was cool, and he was on wrestling. And Gordy is, like, my favorite wrestler ever, all time. Sorry, Manny Fernandez, but, yeah, Terry Gordy found me. Unbelievably awesome. And Buddy is, like, such the great utility comedic foil.
Let me tell you something.
Thinks,
Buddy was really a great worker. I mean, if you really broke it down, Buddy was probably the best worker out of all of them. I mean, Buddy was fabulous. He was really underrated as a worker.
Mm-hmm. Tim and Iceman had that great feud. I remember that.
I'm glad you brought up the Freebirds as workers because, you know, I mean, conventional wisdom, especially if you hear Bill Watts speak, is that Michael Hayes couldn't work, so he was just a talker, but I've watched a ton of mid-South.
Michael Hayes didn't have to do a move.
He was an awesome.
Yeah, Michael could work without even throwing into an arm lock. You know what I'm saying? He was a worker before he even got into the ring. Michael, I'm watching him and Jim Ross, that team together, hosting the show was fabulous. Fabulous. I just watched this a few days ago, and I was just in awe again.
Yeah, I thought they had shit all over Jesse and Vince. Like, they were really good, like, heel commentator, good guy commentator team for sure. I remember, what else were they? Oh, that's like Power Pro Wrestling, right? Is that what the show was called? I remember getting that on TV up here in Pennsylvania back then.
Yeah, it was the TV. It was the UWF TV, and I think Jim Ross just did Power Pro by himself, but it could have been Power Pro. But I know it was definitely the UWF TV when they switched over from Mid-South to UWF.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it was so exciting, and they left you. I mean, we were sitting here, I mean, and that was 20-something years ago, but I was sitting here going, oh, my God, I can't wait to, you know, and we had them, you know, in sequence, and it was like, oh, my God, okay, when's the next, you know, let's put the next DVD in, quick, because it left you so exciting. It left you, every segment, you know, was telling a story, and you had to wait to the next week to see it, and it was just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, Missy, I want to ask.
They had the TV time remaining too, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
Like I did agree with Watts in that. Watts was the old diehard of kayfabe, where he'd be like, "Well, goddamn it, the show ends the same time every week, and the match is over. What does it tell the fans?" So like he'd end it at an exciting point. And then you'd want to pay more money to see what's going to happen in the arenas, which is
I mean, isn't that what wrestling's all about? You put it on TV, and the heel does all the bad stuff on TV to make the people go and pay for a pay-per-view or go and pay for it live. I mean, isn't that the recipe?
Absolutely. Well, I was going to actually ask you about that.
Okay,
hold on, Rob. I was actually going to ask you about that because it just made me think that you worked for Watts and you worked for Texas, where they had marquee matches on TV every week.
Yes.
You know, there were big names. It wasn't just a bunch of squash matches. It was marquee match after marquee match.
And they still drew big crowds. Right.
And it just pisses me off every time I watch, like, old Georgia or old Florida footage or old Crockett, where, you know, you might get a special marquee matchup, like, you know, once every 3 months, and then the rest are just, you know, squashes.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Their shows did what they were supposed to do, made the people come to their arenas.
Yeah,
you know, they really did.
Yeah,
the shows, you know, they had good storylines going in them, and the announcers talked the talk, and, you know, the interviews and things like that. See, I don't think somebody like a Ric Flair should ever be on free TV. Just, you know, that's just me. I think to see Ric Flair, you either have to buy a pay-per-view or go see him live. And it breaks my heart to see him with Cactus Jack doing a thumbtack match. I mean, it breaks my heart because Ric Flair is Ric Flair. So.
Yeah, no, I can agree with the world champion, but it doesn't hurt to have Arn Anderson versus Ron Garvin every week or some variant of that, you know. But
definitely.
To, you know, bring in guys like I don't know. I don't want to say Rocky King, but, you know, you're George South and you're Vernon.
Well, because then it just gets
that.
Like everybody knows what's happening, you know. But
right.
They made up for it.
Yeah, but you know, I just
wasn't
I love
as good
the
as
Texas Mid-South. Formula. Yeah, I love the Texas, that Texas every week. It was Freebirds versus Von Erichs. It was Iceman versus Buddy. It was, you know, John Tatum versus Scott Casey. It was all of those things. And you know, like I said, I lived through it. So, you know, I guess I'm just spoiled, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But I want to go back to the Von Erichs. And now when you came in, it was after David had died. Do you ever remember seeing David work? Or you know, I just heard about him.
I was dating Jake Roberts at the time, and we got the phone call that he had passed away. But I knew who he was because in Atlanta we got World Class. And I used to sit up late and watch the World Class because I loved watching World Class. But I knew who he was. I had seen him work and then, you know, and heard that he passed away.
So when you arrived, did it just feel like a shadow was cast on that company because of his death?
No, we didn't even think about it like that. You know, because at the time, he had just passed, and it was just a freak accident. You know, it wasn't like, you know, didn't have a crystal ball to know what was going to happen.
Well, okay. Rob, do you have another question? Rob? Hey, where's Rob?
On Eric.
Sorry about that. Technical difficulties. I had Rob. Okay, Rob. Sorry about that. Go.
Hey, awesome, thanks. Kevin was always said to be the crazier one, the not like crazy, like legitimately insane, but just kind of wild and reckless. Did you ever see him being a little bit legit in the ring, and any stories about him kind of beating the crap out of people inside the ring? Like, I liked it. It just always looked like it would be a pain in the ass to get in the ring with Kevin Von Erich. He's always swinging.
No, Kevin was great. Kevin was great.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the nicest people in the world. Most laid-back, cool-ass guy in the world.
And he just, I have seen him in interviews, and he does seem really laid back and all that kind
of
stuff.
Oh, yeah,
but,
like surfer dude, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I can familiarize. Like, I love it. But, like, what I'm saying is, like, a lot of times on those documentaries, they paint him as, like kicking Killer Khan in the ear and, like, rupturing his eardrum and all that kind of stuff. But then again, they always explain, in Texas, you got to bring it. Like, I guess down there, you really got your ass kicked and made the people believe. Because I remember a cousin of mine, like, I'm, like, Northeastern here, and my cousin came up from Texas, and he's like, you ever watch Texas wrestling? I'm like, uh-uh. I watched, like, King Kong Money and Hulk Hogan. And he's like, nah, man, Texas wrestling's real. That's where it's at. And I believed it. So, like, I tuned in after school on ESPN and just watched him on air. And, like I said, that scary-ass dude, Kabuki, and I would be, like, enthralled with it every second. I'm like, Jesus. But, okay, another question on the Von Erichs here. Mike Von Erich, were you around when Mike was there?
Mm-hmm, sure was.
Do you remember him and Akbar's feud? That was pretty fun. I remember Akbar and Mike had a bunch of really good matches.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good jump off for him, you know what I mean? Instead of throwing him in with, like, a bigger guy, having him in with Akbar. I don't know.
Yeah, listen, Mike was a very sweet guy, and I was there when he had the toxic shock syndrome and came back. He was really wanting to do more production stuff. I don't think he was really
–
I think he was more into the techie kind of stuff. But he was a nice guy,
mm-hmm.
Really nice kid.
Yeah. No,
he could have been like
just
a
as a fan.
Possibly.
No, well,
go ahead.
What was that, Rob?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as a fan watching Mike, he just – To me, it just always felt like he was uncomfortable in the ring, you know, whereas the others just seemed like naturals. You know, Kerry is a natural. Kevin was natural. David was natural. To me, it just seemed like Mike was very uncomfortable in the ring. Like,
maybe he was
you know,
young.
Like,
he was really young.
Yeah.
You know,
but
he was like 17 or 18 years old, so that's kind of young.
Wow. I don't even know how someone could handle that stress at that age and you know, in that atmosphere, you know, when you have
and you got big shoes to fill
brother.
Because your older brothers, you know, so
yeah, and it's not
mm-hmm.
just one, it's three that you have
yeah.
to live up to that you're compared to day in and day out. So I always always really felt bad for Mike because if you listen to Fritz at the time on the microphone, he always kind of set him up as well. This is the best one yet, you know, and we saved the best for last, or you know, whatever hype he was giving Mike, and I just felt bad for him because. You know, whether it was his physique or his promo, there was no way he was going to be able to live up to that, you know. And
right.
Like, did you ever just get the feeling, like you said, that, you know, he would rather do technical stuff that he just didn't want to wrestle, but he felt obligated to because of
no,
the family
I think
name.
They all, listen, if I had the name Von Erich, I'd want to wrestle. I mean, that's you're raised that way. Your dad's in Fritz Von Erich. I mean, of course you'd want to get into the ring, and you'd want to be part of the family. And at least I know. I mean, look at Lacey Von Erich. I mean, one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, and she wants to wrestle. She could be anything she wanted to be, and she wants to wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
That name Von Erich.
There you go. I'm going to switch gears here. Famous managers, Missy. There's a lot of them in World Class, and what are your thoughts on some of them? We'll run the gamut here. We'll start with the general, Skandar Akbar.
I love him.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. Any good Akbar stories to share?
Yeah, I loved Akbar.
Well,
yeah,
we had a show earlier. We had a Steve Carino on the show, and we were talking about you know, guys like that in a And I had to explain to Robert Carino, once again, these guys up in Philly, that, you know, when you were in Texas and you heard this Arab, you know, as you know, the Texans would call him, come down and talk about his oil money, like, you felt Akbar was legit. And you know, if you're viewing this stuff years later, if you're viewing it from, like, you know, like East Coast eyes or something, maybe you didn't get Akbar.
Irish eyes.
But I think... Irish eyes, there you go, Alex. You know, But, you know, but those of us in Texas, we got Akbar. I mean, we hated him, and we hated everybody he managed. And, you know, I thought he was believable. I could understand if other people didn't. But, you know, here, you know, you have a 12-year-old kid, you know, hoping that, you know, Bruiser Bodie would finally get his hands on him or something.
Exactly.
You know, let's talk
about some Gary Hart. I thought Gary was great. Like, he's like a J.J. Dillon type manager where he wasn't always interfering with the matches and stuff. But I always really liked Gary Hart. He's a hell of a soundbite. I love Gary Hart talking about any kind of wrestling.
Oh, yeah. Gary was really – I liked Gary Hart, too. He was a nice guy. I'm glad I got to see him before he passed.
Yeah.
Now, when you were working with him, did he ever give you any advice, or did he ever interact with you when you actually –
He was always very nice to me.
Okay.
How about Percy Pringle?
I loved Percy because we kind of started it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Percy's funny.
He was managing, I think, Rick Rude at the time. You would have been there at the time, too, I gather, when Rick Rude came in and won the belt. Yeah, that was a good time, too, for wrestling. Any memories of Percy and Rick Reed?
Well, I know that John couldn't make – I had to do a 5-minute match or something with Sunshine, and so he came out there and he, like, helped me with the match. And it was, and we had one already, you know, done up, and he was trying to – and he was supposed to show me moves. He didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. And we just, like, laughed and just kind of just went along with it. Poor Sunshine. She had to carry both of us. You know.
Yeah, you had the big Sunshine match. Was that the Parade of Champions where you wrestled Sunshine, like 86?
Oh, God. I wrestled her so many different places, I have no idea.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
It was the one where I think Brody wrestled Rick Rude in the stadium. I do remember that match. That's funny. Good old Sunshine. Have you heard anything on Sunshine? Is she still around?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard anything about her in a long, long time.
Yeah, I heard Jim Harmon reference something, how she left wrestling, but I've not heard anything since. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Me
I
either.
Like Sunshine, though.
Yeah,
Sunshine,
Sunshine was great. Dark Journey, on the other hand, was a crackhead, but, you know. Oh, yeah, you guys laugh. She didn't kick your ass every night.
No, I just, you putting down Dark Journey never gets old. I freaking love it.
Yeah, well, yeah, have a crackhead beat your ass every night. And then you'll feel the same way, even if it was 20 years ago. And I was watching this stuff, and I was sitting here, and my friend Eric, he was like going, he was watching some of the stuff like with Sunshine and Baby Doll, but then he was seeing her and I fight. He was like, oh, my God. He goes, no wonder. I'm like, dude, that was a shoot. She was beating my ass every night. And then he's like, why is she running around the ring a couple of times? And I'm like, dude, she was a crackhead. She didn't know what she was doing. And now that you look back on it in retrospect, it's like, what the heck was she thinking? Or she wasn't.
Maybe you should have been the one to, like, slip her a bump or something, you know.
I tried. She was greasy. She was like, wiggly, man. And she always had baby oil or something on. I could never get a hold. All the boys were trying to show me, like, Steiner, this is how you get the hold on her. I could never get one on her. I'm not a worker. Never claimed to be, you know. Couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, one of the earliest memories I have of actually, you know, seeing you and was the Sunshine feud, but it was you and Tatum versus Sunshine and Scott Casey.
What
are some of your memories of that actual feud? You know, because when I watched the matches, I love the interaction between
you know,
you and John.
Tatum is so underrated as a worker because he was really good. People, like, you know, out-chatted it because of us being together, but he was really good. And his facial expressions and just everything about him, he was really good. He would have been a star without me, you know. I just, like, was an extra added thing. But him and Scott Casey, we had some great – that was great times. All that does to me is just bring back great memories for me.
Well, I think with the advent of, like, you know, a lot of this footage coming out, and you know, like, you know, tape traders discovering old world class matches. I think a lot of that is going to be revisited, and I think you're right. John Tatum is one of those guys who, when people look back at him, they're going to say, "God, this guy was a natural in the ring." You know, he
oh
was
my
another
God.
One of those
yes.
guys who did, who, like Michael Hayes, he didn't have to hook up and do a single move, but he'd have the crowd going crazy,
oh,
you know?
Definitely. I mean, just the way his facial expressions and stuff was. I mean, yeah. He was such a big crybaby. It was so good. I mean, and we were watching the stuff, and he's like, "Oh, but Missy, I'm your favorite guy. I'm your favorite guy." And just the things that he did and he said, it was just really good stuff. Good stuff.
Rob, what are your thoughts on John Tatum?
I'll jump in with my thoughts on John Tatum if Rob's not there. John Tatum, I saw on your set, Will, your mid-set set, and I'd never seen the guy before. I'd heard his name bandied around a couple of times. I think he was, there was a match with Terry Taylor that I absolutely loved, and I was like, whoa, this guy's awesome. I need to see more of his stuff. He was just, he's someone that if people haven't seen, they should definitely check out, because he's highly entertaining heel.
Oh, very entertaining.
And
it would have
John
been
Taylor
so
song.
Great is like when I went with Eddie, if like Sunshine would have came in and then been with John Tatum, and then we could have done, you know, the Missy and Eddie against John and him. But then I think about it and I'm like, wow, I wonder if they were doing that now and if it was like Vince Russo booking it. But then he would swerve it all in the end and have John and Eddie walk off together and be
oh,
gay or something. You know, it really screwed up and it would screw up everything, so.
Yeah.
That's in the 80s. We have to just, you know, love the 80s for what it was. It was great stuff because,
I would love to pay for a ticket to see, you know, John Tatum versus Eddie Gilbert. I would not want to pay to see John and Eddie as the equivalent of Chuck and Billy. You know,
exactly.
That's going to happen.
Yeah. That would be, that wouldn't be good.
Before I go into the next question, my favorite Tatum stuff was in Global, of all things. I remember they did an Eddie-John match, but I remember...
Oh, yeah,
Tatum
the loser had to
was...
date me again? Yeah, I remember that.
I remember Pettitino on commentary. But, they did that match, and I remember Tatum was... there was a guy, Rod Price was his name. I always thought he was like Stone Cold at the time, like Steve Austin, but Rod... trained by Tatum how to do a super kick, and it was
right.
Some really funny stuff. Like Tatum would do this really cool, loud sounding one, and then Rod Price would do like this really like Ralph Macchio, awesome any kind of ability type kick, and he'd be like, "Oh, what are you doing?" You know. So I thought they were really funny together. But I guess we'll go into the monsters of world class. All kinds of crazy people outside of Kabuki were there. We'll start with another guy that scared the living shit out of me back in 1986 when he came to my high school gymnasium for an indie show, Abdullah the Butcher. Do you remember anything about Abby?
Oh, yeah. Abby threw me in a water trap on live TV. Gotta love Abby. Gotta love Abby.
Yes, he did. In the freezing cold, no less. That had to be brutal.
Yeah, definitely.
A Clash of Champions where my favorite Van Hammer was wrestling Cactus, if I recall that correctly.
Yeah, and that was another thing in wrestling that I had no clue that was going to go on. I had no idea they were going to do that to me.
Your reaction was...
I actually had no clue. I wouldn't have had a live microphone in my hand when I went in the water.
Oh, my God.
No, yeah, they were. You know, I found out years later, Dusty told me they were going to throw me into the arena where the bull was, but then the people at the fair were like, "Well, no, the bull could, like, actually go and charge her and hurt her." Okay, well, I guess we'll just throw her in the water then. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, that would have been a nightmare of legal entanglements there.
Oh, yeah, and I probably wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, right? We wouldn't have Missy Hyatt on our show, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later. So, my God.
How about Kamala? But, do you remember Kamala?
Oh, yeah, I loved
Kamala. Story?
No, yeah, not really. But, you know, back then we had kayfabe and stuff, and they wouldn't talk, you know, Kamala wouldn't talk. I mean, you know, like Kabuki. Kabuki didn't talk in the dressing room. Still kayfabe.
Yeah.
Hey, they were kayfabing me for a long time when I was in the business. I used to go, "Hey, my name's not Kay, it's Missy," you know, because every time I'd walk in, they'd go kayfabe. So.
And you didn't know to take that as a compliment or an insult, huh?
I had no clue because it was kayfabe. So I didn't know.
Was that the same thing for like Missing Link, Abdullah, all of them? Just
well, we never shared the dressing room with the baby faces, you know. Yeah, they were always in a different dressing room. We never.
Okay. I guess Missing Link was a baby face when you were there. Well, mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. I know. Heel Link and Babyface. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, it's just when you were there though, like was it as simple as okay, they're in the dressing room, they don't talk, so you just leave them alone, or were they that
and
way?
I used
with,
to sit
with
in the corner in the dressing
too,
room,
or just like you.
Well,
you
no,
know?
I sat in the corner facing the wall because it's disrespectful to be in a men's dressing room and be sitting there. Looking at the guys. I mean, they're changing. They're doing their things. I used to sit in the corner and look at the wall and read a book.
Oh, wow.
I don't like being in a dressing room where there's guys in there dressing. That's disrespectful to me to be in there.
Right.
I always try to have my own room. I don't ever want to be in the guy. And I would always turn my head if I had to walk by the door, even if the door wasn't open, just because, you know, they're doing their thing. It's a guy's dressing room. Women shouldn't be in there.
No, I agree with you. I just find it surprising that they didn't actually try to accommodate you and, you know, put you somewhere else.
Hey, this was wrestling back in the 80s, dude. Women weren't in the business. You know, there was a new kind of thing. They didn't know how to do it.
Wow. So. That's, you know, there's so many people that went through World Class, and like I said, I've been watching a lot of older footage. And the team that I've come across lately is and I'm loving every single match.
Sorry. Oh, you know what, you guys? I have someone that's bringing over a doggy that I'm going to be babysitting because that's what I do now. I babysit dogs. And so I didn't know that we were going to be doing it this long. Hold on. And now you can hear all the little doggies going. Do you hear that? Welcome to my
Thanks
world.
Thanks for being on, Misty. We really appreciate it.
Hey, listen, guys, anytime you want me, just give me a holler and let me know, okay?
Awesome. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Misty.
Sure. You guys take care.
Take it easy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Channel dropped over a bunch of racist dogs.
Yeah, she just loves the animals. God bless Missy Hyatt for coming on the show. That's awesome. And we got a dog war at the end, which is amazing. God, I hope that all got worked out. But we got three of us now. Alan, maybe we could converge the show and do a what's going on in wrestling now conversation, and then we'll just have Missy back at some point as well.
I don't care at all, Rob. I'm happy to talk about whatever you guys want.
Man.
All right.
So,
well,
Alan, this is a dilemma we have with when me and Naylor get on the air here, is that you know, Naylor's always keeping me up to date with what's going on today, and I'm always trying to get him to talk about the past. You know, so
hey, I'm good with either.
Interesting dynamic.
Yeah, no, I just cool with me. I'd be watching old stuff just as much as I'll be watching new stuff. And what you think of the old school Raw? Did you watch that, Will?
No, hello?
Yeah,
I'm
still here.
Will?
Guys, I'm sorry, man. My little switchboard was acting up, and it wouldn't. It kept clicking on and off. I think that's what was happening with you earlier, Rob. But
I got disconnected like three times.
No,
I
did not watch the old school Raw. I was actually busy compiling some more footage, which I do, you know, some past stuff. I did watch Raw, but it was from 1996. And, quite different. It was actually a HBK match. It was HBK versus Triple H, you know.
Oh,
and
back in
and
Sean's
at that time,
stripper day.
Maybe you can give me an idea of how hot was the crowd for the old guys on the old school Raw.
For Piper, Piper was like Major over and like his promo. You'll love his promo. Well, like I was. It's funny. There was a thread on DVD or one of the Dean Creates Content threads, which are deadly. And Dean was asking about what was the question? Like, wrestlers that you've like just never kind of got or you never really saw the appeal of or the hype of. And I answered, and my answer was Roddy Piper. It's just one of these guys just never really clicked with me. And then, funnily enough, a couple of days later, I see this show, and Piper cuts this promo, and I'm like, holy shit, that was just such an unbelievable promo. And honestly, one of my favorite promos I've ever seen Piper do. And it was about, like, the stupid John Cena Nexus stuff, which he really did a great job with it.
Well, the reason I ask is because I'm watching this stuff from 96. And usually, you know, you hear like from 95 to 96, it's kind of like what people consider like the low point of like WWF popularity. You know, Vince was losing all this money. But my God, like compared to the last pay-per-view I watched, which I think was SummerSlam this year. What was the one after SummerSlam? The one in...
Oh, I don't know, like TLC or something like that, maybe?
Dude, I don't know.
Actually,
maybe
I actually forgot.
Whatever, man. Like,
generic
WWE pay-per-view number 8. Okay, let's just put it that way.
Babelford,
whatever show it was, it was, you know, I was watching this stuff from like the low point of WWF TV and comparing the heat to like some of the shows I've seen this year, just night and day, that even in 96 when it was at its lowest point, it was so much louder and the crowd was so much more into it than today, you know, and it just really...
Sean was over like a motherfucker.
Well, just everybody, I mean, really, I mean, you know, it was Austin, it was Brett, Sean, who else was really lighting up the world in 96? Pig and Hall.
Ahmed Johnson.
You know? Ahmed Johnson was insanely over.
Ahmed Johnson is amazing. He should have been the next big thing, man.
Well, he kind of fired up himself. Plus, he got injured, you know, so.
He was so roided up with so
like I thought his belly, which he was like this big jacked up dude, but he had this steroid belly that looked like it was about to explode at any moment, and like chickens were gonna fly out of it or something. That guy was just pumped up. He was pumped up like a goddamn Mitchell, man. It was disgusting. And then he, like, I don't know if he got off the gas or if he just stopped working out, but when he went to WCW, he just turned into a big fat whale. It was hilarious.
No, I agree. I mean, I remember seeing Ahmed when I first started watching wrestling again and thinking, wow, this guy's somebody. You know, then you hear him on the microphone and, you know, he couldn't understand a fucking word he said. But it didn't matter, man, because, you know, he had the tassels and he had the, you know, the Pearl River plunge and, you know, the diving out of the ring, you know, with reckless abandon. And, you know, I was actually surprised he didn't make it bigger than he did. But, you know, I mean, whatever. I mean, I wonder if they can get him for the next old school reunion. Yeah. Rob, you back with us?
Yes, I still like Ahmed Johnson a lot. I think he should have been Black Goldberg. It would have been amazing. I think he could have run through everybody, man. I remember he slammed Yokozuna and...
Yeah, that was his debut. I was like, who is this guy? He's here, and he slammed Yokozuna. He's a cool guy. But I was also
the baby faces
and the heels were all teamed together, and I like didn't know who I was supposed to cheer for, and then Ahmed just slammed Yoko, and I was like, screw it, I'm going to cheer for that guy. That black man, he slammed Yokozuna. He ruled.
The rage he felt when Goldust kissed him. That was to me the most memorable Ahmed moment, where he just freaks out like, holy shit, a guy just kissed me.
That was the biggest temper tantrum ever. It was so great. He just starts like, he just starts snarling and throwing people against the wall. And he was, oh my God. Like Razor's temper tantrums and Goldust did that stuff were pretty good, but Ahmed's was just like psycho, Daisuke Sekimoto, bug-eyed, angry shit when it's the scariest thing in the world.
Well, hey, guys, I actually think we've kind of touched upon a neat topic, and this will combine my world and Rob's world, and that is, what old school guys would you like to see on, like, the next old school Raw reunion or whatever?
The main thing I want would be just a different cast of characters, because it's always the same dudes. Like, I have no problem with, say, Ted DiBiase and Dusty Rhodes and all these people, but they're the same guys. Like, they're wheeled out every single time. I just like some different guys. Anyone.
That's what I'm saying. You get to name the guys, Alan. What guys do you want to see? You tell us.
Lex Luger.
Sid Vicious. That's mine. I want Sid.
I'd love to see the head shrinkers. Fucking Bob. Stick Rikishi. Bring Rikishi. You know Rikishi would come in. Bring him in. Unearth Samu. Have them come out. Like, is Asa still alive? Bring Asa out. Have
he
him
is
chomp
still
on
alive,
a pineapple
yeah.
or something. Yeah, have him come out with a pineapple or just chow on that and just like, hey, everybody's the head shrinkers and they can like do something with Rikishi's sons. Like, something like that would be so cool. Who else?
Forgive my ignorance, but who's Rikishi's son?
His sons. He's got twin sons. They're a tag team in WWE now. What are their
names?
Is that
the Usos?
Jimmy and Jay. Yeah, Jimmy and
Jay
Uso.
Those are Rikishi's sons?
Yep.
Shit, man. I'm getting old. I didn't realize that we were already on the next generation, you know. I was thinking of making a different tattoo, you know. Damn.
Yeah, no, but he probably had them pretty early. He was probably thugging and bugging in San Francisco and knocked up some young lady back in their teens and head popped the Uso twins.
Okay. I had no idea that those were his sons. You know, you always hear about, you know, this huge Samoan family lineage, right? And then you tell me that, you know, Rikishi's sons are the Usos. I knew that they were somebody's kids. I didn't know that they were Rikishi's, you know. Damn, how time flies by, you know. Who else would you like to see on, like, the next old school Raw? I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking if we're going to go WWF, I want to see the Killer Bees, and I want to see the Rougeaus, and, you know, maybe...
I don't think Jock could be doing that. But as from Mike Quebecker's show we just did, it doesn't sound like Jock thinks too fondly of Vince these days, so I'd be surprised if he showed up there. Pierre, I'm sure, would do it. But Pierre, of course, is still feeling the effects from his tryout when he, a couple of years ago, he had a tryout or was working a dark match or something, and after the show, he went to say thanks to Vince, and Vince shoved him into the wall and walked away.
What?
You've never heard
that
story?
That.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, Pierre, like, did a dark match a couple of years ago, and, like, he said to someone, should I say thanks and to Vince, like, before I leave, and they said, yeah, go ahead. And he walks over to Vince and is like, hey, Vince, I just want to thank you. Again, had a great time. And Vince just pushes him into a wall and goes, get out of my way, and walks off.
So was this like Vince McMahon backstage roid rage going on or what?
Yeah. It sounds exactly like what it was. But,
poor Pierre.
How many of you guys never heard that story? I love that one.
I never heard it. I love Pierre. I hear about Pierre all the time. I never heard that. That's crazy. See, I needed to listen to your show to know that. That's nuts.
Yeah.
I want to be on the Rob Quebecker show. What's that?
Rob, who would you like to see other than Ahmed Johnson?
Oh, God. I would like
Demolition,
to see...
Demolition, maybe? Akeem?
No, F Demolition. I would like to see Akeem... I'd like to have Slick back, but put Slick on for longer than 20 seconds.
That was real disappointing. I thought they were going to do the whole song, and they just did, like, the first, like, 30 seconds of the song. It was really, really annoying.
I think that's the difficulty.
See, so many people I'd like to see are, like, dead now, so it's difficult to say.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say, is that I was started throwing out a list of names, and then I had to thank God, are they alive or dead? And then I started to get depressed, and I wasn't really that excited about another old school Raw, you know, because you start thinking about what could have been if they were alive, you know, but they're not, so.
Yeah. Hey, but, Alan, have you, real quick, off topic, I just got to ask Alan this while I have him on the phone. Have you seen the Golden Lovers Apollo 55 match yet?
Rob, my DVD of that whole show arrived today. I ordered the DVD a week ago, and then immediately after I ordered it from Jeff Lynch, all the matches popped up online, and I was really annoyed. But I don't mind, because I got the whole show now, and I'm going to sit back and watch it tomorrow afternoon. Every match.
You are going to love it.
It's the most stacked
spoilers,
show.
You are
going to
lose your shit for this match.
Yeah, I have been expecting to lose my shit for this match ever since it happened. And you know, Rob, they just had a rematch in DDT, and it was apparently, like, it was. I don't know the length of the first match, but this was a real short one. It was like 10 minutes, actually, maybe even 9 minutes, but they just went, like, just flat out, just threw everything at it for 9 minutes, and it was meant to be a real killer match. David, he broke his rib. They were doing a five-day junior tag league thing, and every night, 5 days in a row, and then I think the second night, Davey Richards broke David's ribs, and David worked through the next three nights, and he was just meant to be just absolute agony, but he worked through the shows, and then went to DDT a couple of days later, and did that tag match, and I guess they probably cut it shorter, because he was hurt, but apparently they still had an awesome kick-ass match, even within the time, and they're doing him and Davey for the singles title now, in about a couple of weeks' time, so that should be an awesome match, but yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to seeing that show. There's loads of other cool matches on there, Tanahashi against Naito, Nakamura, Goto, and the Noah versus New Japan tag looks really good. So yeah, I'm stoked to see that. And
You share my opinion of Jack Evans and Noah, by the way.
Oh God, he was okay.
What
on last
happened,
night.
Man? What happened to Jack Evans and Noah?
I didn't the first night, but it wasn't all Jack. The first match I saw, like, just everyone apart Sugira and Go, when they were in with each other, were fine, but everyone else with each other in that six man was just, that Extreme Tiger guy was awful. Ricky Marvin looked atrocious. Taiji, God bless him, was trying his best with these guys, but he was struggling. And yeah, Jack looked out of it. The thing that was weird about Jack to me was he just seemed like, not even when he's in the ring, but just in general, he just seemed, I don't want to speculate anything, but I don't know, he could be fine, but he just seemed way out of it. Like, he was, like, okay, Extreme Tiger was his partner, and he'd be, like, say, getting the heat on, they'd be getting the heat on, like, one of the other team's guys, and, like, the other team would make a hot tag, and someone would come in as a house on fire, and, like, be beating up Extreme Tiger, like, as the babyface comeback. And Jack would start trying to get the chance to Chad Tiger at the most, like, inappropriate time. And it was just so weird. And he just, yeah. He was all right, though, on the final night. It was a tag with him and Tiger against Kenta and Aoki. And I thought he did better there. He took an awesome bump for Kenta.
Man, that six man, though, was a disaster. Fuck. I knew it was bad when he did his stand on the opponent and do a moonsault on him, and he completely missed. Like, I was like, oh, my God. And, like, I he's still good. I've seen him in Jersey All-Pro have some good shit this year, but, like, I hate to say this, and all the Luchador fans will be all pissy about this, but I think him doing Lucha has made him 100 times worse. Because now he tries to fit in his flips everywhere, because that's, like, how they transition down there, at least how he's been transitioning in matches down there. And it's fucking awful, dude. Like, I hate his AAA matches. And, like, it reminded me of a shitty AAA match, that six-man. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I still have mad faith in Jack because I love him, but, man, that was rough. I felt bad. I was like, fuck, afterwards. I couldn't believe it. Whereas the other guy, Ricochet, now is the man. Like, Ricochet is, like, moving upward in the world, man.
Yeah, big Ricochet fan. Big Ricochet fan. Yeah. He's everywhere now, so that's cool. And the Generico Ricochet match just got released on DVD, so everyone picked that up.
I know. I can't wait to see it, man.
That's, I was told by someone who would be privy to seeing that match as it happened, and they said that it was like Generico was almost like a heel Jushin Liger in that match, and which
oh, wow.
was just the coolest thing you could ever say to me. And that sounds good. Will, I gotta ask you.
Yes.
Are you fucking crazy? 54 disc Kawada comp. That's like the most amazing thing I've ever seen. How in the hell did you put that together?
Well, one, it consumed my life for a while, but I think I'll be covered for that. But here's the deal, man. I mean, I love Misawa. I love Kobashi. Rob and I were talking. We're going to do a show shortly in the future on just nothing but All Japan in the 1990s and how fucking awesome it was. But when I have to think of, like, you know, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, it's Kawada. Like, I don't know if I would have invested that much time in a Kobashi comp or a Misawa comp. Not because I don't love those guys, but just because, like, you know, Kawada is one of those, like, life-changing wrestlers for me where I always thought, okay, if I'm going to show somebody what I like about wrestling, I'm going to put on this Kawada man, you know, or I'm going to do this. And I just followed him. And, you know, sad to say, you know, as much as I loved Kawada in All Japan, I hadn't really seen any, I hadn't seen any of his stuff after he left All Japan or when he was kind of a free agent, you know, like a lot of 01 or Hustle stuff. And I just started collecting it all. At first, originally, the set was just going to be a Footloose comp. A buddy of mine and a buddy of Rob's wanted a Footloose comp. And I said, okay, you know, Footloose is a killer team because I've been watching a lot of that for the 1980 DVD-VR All Japan set that's going to be released soon. And I said, no, Footloose is great. And then after Footloose, I was like, well, shit, I have a bunch of All Japan from the 90s. I should just make a Kawada and All Japan comp. And then I was watching this stuff, and it just reminded me, you know, a lot of people haven't watched 90s All Japan in a long time, you know, for whatever reason, you know, just, and I was revisiting this stuff after not watching it for, you know, 7 or 8 years and thinking, okay, this is why I love this stuff, because, you know, these matches are completely awesome. And so I said, well, if Kawada, you know, everyone says Kawada fell off a cliff, that he's no good anymore. So I have to see these matches. And you know, there's some lackluster matches, but in almost every single match I put on the set, he does something cool, you know, or he kicks somebody's head off. Like, there's a D'Lo Brown match on there, which is like a 7 or 8 minute match. But, you know, he ends it by kicking D'Lo Brown in the head in like a spot you would have never seen D'Lo Brown in WWF ever take. And I'm like, okay, this has to go on because he just fucking knocked D'Lo Brown's head off. And I just kept going and going, and it ended up at 54 discs. And if I could have found a couple rarities, it probably would have been 55. But
I can actually make a suggestion for 55. I was just looking at your list to see if you had a certain match, and I'll send you a link to it. I think it was from 2009, and it was Kawada. This is for a random match. Kawada against Magnum Tokyo. And
hey, hold on. Someone already gave me grief for that. And I'm going to tell you, man. I actually, okay. And I'm okay with that, but I was actually okay with leaving the match off. You know, just, I'll throw it on the bonus disc when it's for sure that he's retired. And I can find some of his old Canadian footage and Texas All-Star footage, and I make Kawada, the bonus disc, number 55. I'll fucking throw that match on there. Just for you, though, Alan. Just for you, okay?
Did you see it, Will? I was just saying it because I told you
I'm not even going to fucking, like, sell you the set, Alan. I'm just going to send you disc number 55, and you're going to have to think, wow, what about the 54 disc that came before this? Yeah,
awesome.
Just for you.
Awesome.
Number 55, Magnum versus.
Did you not like that? Did you not like that match then?
It was all right, man. But I mean, okay, at that time when I watched it too, to be fair, I had just finished watching 100 fucking hours of Kawada, man. Yeah. By that time, it was like, he didn't kick his head off nearly hard enough, you know, or something, or maybe they missed the corner spot or something, and nope, it's off. He missed the spot, you know. By that time, it was like just it was overkill, you know. And for people who like that kind of wrestling, I got a 10-ring set I'm working on that's going to be just as long, man, or maybe a little bit shorter, but it's going to be a huge, huge undertaking, you know, because not only has the All Japan stuff.
Tenryu's a guy that I've really not seen as much of as I could have. He's one of those guys who kind of falls, a lot of his stuff falls into kind of my gaps of Japanese wrestling that I've missed out on. And yeah, that's a guy I really do need to see more of. And especially more of his older stuff where he has that spiffy hairstyle.
Hey, man, I think he's had the same hairstyle for 30 fucking years.
He's kind of got that kind of poofy poodle mullet thing for the last like 20 years or whatever. But if you get really old stuff, he'll have this kind of like, I don't know how I could describe it, but it's just this real 70s haircut. Like it's awesome.
Yeah, I listened to a Stan Hansen interview recently, and they asked him in between Kawada, Kobashi, and Misawa, what guy he'd want to wrestle most and who he thinks the highest of. And he goes, Tenryu. And I'm like, oh, shit, you know? I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Hansen put over Tenryu pretty huge.
Well, you need to get Stan Hansen on this show.
Yeah, man. Really. Well, we live in Texas. I'll just drive over to his house and ask him, you know?
Yeah.
No problem. now,
have you ever
you
been
know,
to
Borger, people...
Texas? Have you been to Borger, Texas?
No. Man, now,
God,
let me
it.
Give you
I
a...
I would go there if I lived there.
Put this way, I live in the heart of Texas. I live in San Antonio, okay? And if I want to leave Texas driving west, it'll take me 10 hours. Okay?
Oh,
if I want to get to Oklahoma, it's going to take me 6. But now Louisiana, it'll just take me about 4, you know, but anywhere you drive in Texas is a long drive. Okay? And it takes even longer to get out of the state, so you know, I'll look on a like MapQuest or something, and I'll see if I can find Borger, Texas on a map, and I'll just camp outside there. I'll go look for the Double Cross Ranch, or maybe we can get Terry Funk on here too to talk about how great Jumbo and Tenryu were, you know.
So what else do we want to talk about, guys?
Hey, man, we can talk about whatever, Alan, you know. I'm just kind of on a little buzz, you know. We had Missy Hyatt on here, you know. Hyping up John Tatum for my future John Tatum set, you know. So
I know what I want to mention about Ben, and you might not have seen this, Will, so we can skip past it quick enough, but I just want to get Rob's thoughts. Rob, I watched the other day the 2003 ROH show main event spectacles with the Teddy Hart crazy dives in that scramble cage and all that stuff. And I forgot how much fun 2003 era ROH was. Like, Gabe on commentary just being horrible, but kind of funny in a weird way. And the main event with AJ and Danielson, Steve Corino doing his big long ring introductions, and the Second City Saints, the Prophecy, just all this craziness going on. Just it was so much kind of less polished kind of than it is now, but it was a lot more. And you had that huge Rexplex crowd. It was just nuts for everything. Oh, I love that era of War, right? Rob, you there?
Rob. Okay, well, I'll check and see if he got disconnected again, Alan. But I'm with you. Actually, that was probably at the peak of my ROH fandom was that time, you know, because I'd never seen any of those guys. I'm not from the East Coast. I didn't see them in all the other indie feds. You know, like, I never saw AJ Styles in Wildside or, you know, even Steve Corino, I'd only seen a little bit of him on ECW, you know, in 2000. So just, you know, having a, you know, all these ROH DVDs and just, you know, my mind was blown, you know, seeing Samoa Joe and Low Ki and all these guys. Just, you know, insane.
Yeah.
at Cornette the time for me, was on it was that, a huge eye-opening.
Cornette was on that hooking up with the Briscoes, and they did this cool turn and beat down of Samoa Joe. It was just really well done. It was crazy seeing how young the Briscoes were there. Like, Mark literally looked about 16 years old. He probably wasn't that much older.
I think he was, man. I think he was 16. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just Cornette's there cutting his usual kind of. It was really funny because, like, you think back to the 80s, and Cornette would cut these huge promos, and you'd have Stan Lane or whoever standing beside him, and they'd be going along with it. They'd be giving the looks and kind of be looking real cool beside Cornette. Whereas the Briscoes, like, when they were so young, Cornette was there cutting these promos flanked by the two of them, and they just did look like they knew how to react. Like, Mark just kept looking at Jay, and Jay would kind of look at Mark, and they'd kind of, like, be like, yeah, occasionally, and stuff like that. And it just didn't fit at all, but Cornette was giving it the old college try.
Hey, Rob, just in case, because Rob, for those who don't know, Rob got cut off again. Rob, just in case you don't know, we're talking about 2003 ROH, and Alan recently discovered that era.
I remember the show he's talking about. Homicide was supposed to wrestle on that show, and then Low-Key effed them over, so they fired Low-Key, and they brought BJ Whitmer Homicide, which was good. Then they also did Briscoes against Izzy and Dixie, which was awesome, really good match. I remember they did a Doomsday Device, and they did a Vegematic in that match, which I thought was cool.
Yep.
Then there was another match with the Scramble Cage, which Alan talked about. I was not at the show live. I should have been at this show live, because if there's ever one show in my life, including all the NWA shows and ECW shows I didn't get to go to, this is the one show that I regret not going to the most. So think about that for a second.
I'm happy you didn't go, because I think you would have had a heart attack when Jack did the double moonsault. I don't think you would have lived past that night. I'm sorry, Rob.
Yeah, man. Like, I remember I was the one that told Gabe about Jack, and I know that Teddy had the mystery partner that night. It ended up being Jack. Jack did the double moonsault. Teddy went crazy. And I remember the next day seeing photos of the event, and Jack and Teddy's moves off the cage in vivid photography stills just amazed me. Like, I was like, who are these guys? What's this all about? It was just crazy. And, like, Jack had this crazy haircut, and Teddy had, like, the living color dreads going on at the time. Like, I just loved it. I was a huge fan of them. I thought they were, like, a new age new breed because they had this crazy gear, these weird haircuts. They're flying all over the place. I was like, who the fuck? What's going on here? And I was like, man, Ring of Honor is about to go to the next level now. And then, like, the next day, Teddy got fired, and Jack was on, like, probation. So I was like, fuck, you know, because I was just about as hyped as you could get. I was like, fuck Low-Key, we don't need him. And then, like, they got in trouble that night, and then they didn't come back for a while. But I was like, Jesus Christ. I remember that very well, Alan. That's a good-ass show.
Yeah, that whole era, I think, you know, is underlooked, too. I mean, even, like, I know a match at the time that kind of got shit on was CM Punk versus Terry Funk, because it kind of had, like, the one of those questionable finishes, and at the time ROH was known for, you know, always having, like, clean finishes or whatever. If you ever go back and watch
that
CM Punk versus Terry Funk match, it's actually a really good match, you know, but, you know, ROH fans are spoiled with clean finishes, and I think that might have affected people's
I thought the match,
you know,
though, like, I don't like Terry Funk in the 2000s too much, but I get why people would like it, maybe, but I thought it was a mess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but when was
the
last time you watched it, though?
Was it
10 years ago? When was the last time you watched it, Rob?
About 3 or 4 years ago, probably. I'll have to check it out again.
Yeah. Maybe
Glory by Honor.
That was
the show. I remember really loving the Chris Daniels Samoa Joe title match.
Oh yeah, that was pretty good. Now that you mention that,
yeah, well, it had been built up really, really well.
You know, I don't watch TNA. I can't put myself through it, so I didn't really see any of, like, Chris Daniels TNA stuff. And so, you know, I know a lot of people said whatever he used to have, he lost or whatever. And I don't know. I just remember then, you know, 2002, Fallen Angel, Chris Daniels, and even 2003, really enjoying Chris Daniels stuff.
Yeah, I loved Chris Daniels when I first saw him. I think the point where, as I'm losing my voice here, I think the point where I kind of got off the Chris Daniels bandwagon was when he came back to ROH, because after he left ROH and he was in TNA just, like, I still really liked him, and he had the feud with AJ that was really good. But then he came back to ROH mid-2005, and at first I was like, oh my God, Chris Daniels is back, this is so great. And then it was like he had one big match, and I was like, huh, that wasn't so great. And then he has a match with Matt Hardy, and I'm like, oh, Chris Daniels versus Matt Hardy, this is going to be amazing. And it was kind of crappy and boring. And I was like, it's interesting. And then he had like this really boring 60-minute match with Punk when Punk was doing the champion thing. And then it was like just several months went by, and I was like, oh, wow, I haven't really enjoyed much Chris Daniels at all since he came back. And then he, 2006, he was just really boring. And in fairness, a lot of it was through booking, because he was booked kind of like just in meaningless four ways. And just he wasn't doing anything important, and so I kind of stopped really enjoying Christopher Daniels around that point. I've never really gotten back on his bandwagon. Occasionally I see a thing or two that he does that I really like, but generally if I watch old stuff, like I remember watching a match he had with Sanjay from MLW about a year ago, and it totally blew my mind how good it was, and I was like, wow, it's not just that I'm tired of Christopher Daniels. He actually just was a lot more fun to watch then. Because like,
yeah, I watched the match of his from I think 97 or 98. I don't know, from ECW, and they put him over. I want to say it was Super Crazy, okay, and it was a really good match, and I was like, wow, this is Christopher Daniels. And then, you know, you watch some of that old APW, like, those King of the Indie tournaments and stuff, and he really was on fire. And then, of course, the first 6 months of ROH, you know, Christopher Daniels was holding his own with, you know, Dragon and Loki and those guys. And I don't know what happened, man. I don't know if it's just a case of, you know, your act gets stale or injuries pile up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea why
he was too
doesn't appeal the same way.
Yeah, he's doing too much of the same stuff, I thought. Like, it just seemed like he didn't improve. He stayed where he was, had the same match with everybody. And, like, I know people say that, like, Davey is mechanical. I don't understand that. I don't understand the old heart stuff either. But that's another conversation for another day. But, I don't know. I think Chris Daniels is definitely mechanical. If you could name one guy who's mechanical, I would say that would be the guy.
Yeah.
I just thought of one recent thing he did that I did really, really enjoy. His match with Kenny Omega from the iPay-Per-View in Toronto was very, very good. That was a real surprise by how much I enjoyed that. And I thought his match with Hero at Battle Los Angeles was quite good. Hero and PWG, kind of a bad match.
Yeah, I know Hero liked it. I thought it was okay. But I thought it was good for a Chris Daniels match, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Hello?
What do you guys think of Homicide at the moment? Has Homicide completely lost what he had? I don't know, Will, if you've seen any of his recent stuff, but...
I haven't, but I love Homicide, so I have nothing bad to say about the man. You know,
I have a reason.
I felt so bad when his leg got caught in the cage on TNA and shit.
Oh, that was, I felt so, I really like Homicide as well. I was such a huge fan of his, and I think as a person he's a really cool guy, but
I'm just saying, of all the shitty wrestlers on the TNA roster, for the one to get his leg stuck in the cage and just kind of, you know, to be embarrassed, you know, and I've heard, like, I think it was maybe an interview with Alvarez or something, where Homicide, you know, took it in stride and say, you know, shit, accidents happen or whatever, you know, he was really cool about it, but, like, you know, fucking Hogan's 60 years old, why couldn't Hogan have had, like, a Shockmaster moment and, like, tripped and rolled down the fucking
Hogan's
stage
whole life is
a
Shockmaster moment these days.
No shit. But you know what I mean, though, still. You know, on that show, why did Homicide have to be the one to be stuck in the awkward moment, you know?
Yeah.
Could have been fucking Abyss,
right.
You know, or somebody, you know?
There's another guy whose life is an embarrassment these days. Abyss is just, like, out on TV being wheeled out and having the fact that he's obviously a complete masochist in real life exposed to everyone.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I was looking back at my notes, Alan, and it was Christopher Daniels versus Super Crazy from June of 1999. And you fully expect Super Crazy to just squash this guy. But Daniels pulls out the win, you know. Super Crazy's frustrated because he hits, like, every fucking big move of his in an attempt, you know, like where he does the triple moonsault and all the flips and shit. And he's just frustrated because Daniels keeps kicking out of his moves. And then finally Daniels nails him with, I think it's the angel wings or whatever he has. Whatever his finisher is, his little face plant finisher.
I really like the Super Crazy Hidaka match from around that time in ECW.
Oh, yeah.
Hidaka
just came in out
of nowhere, and it was like, who is this little tiny Japanese guy from some promotion called Battle Arts? And then he's like doing the sick German suplex where he rolls through into a knee bar. It just, so good.
Rob, is that what you and I watched that one time? The Crazy versus Hidaka, is that who that was?
Yeah, that's on my comp. I think the one on the comp is from Nashville, but they also had a match at the arena from the TV show that was really good.
Okay. Yeah.
So I remember everything they did. That was such a great pairing, and they had never even wrestled before that, so it was really good.
No, you're right. That Crazy Hidaka feud was pretty awesome at the time.
And
in fact,
Alan,
1999-2000 ECW was awesome. As we, you know, said with Gabe when Gabe was on our show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I'm going to see Evolve tomorrow. And Homicide Moxley is, like, the new hot indie feud. But I'm not as into it as most people. I think it'll be good, but if this anything
Moxley's promo was pretty awesome.
You know, I like Homicide's promo. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
I think
that was good, too.
I think he did good, too. So yeah,
I like the Chuck Taylor Austin Aries battling of promos. I think that's been pretty good. I like a lot of the Evolve's kind of out of the ring stuff that they do. I know some people, obviously, like the Larry Dallas stuff leaves a lot to be desired. But I think in general, a lot of the out of ring Evolve stuff is quite cool. Like the Sawa video was like just about the greatest thing to happen in wrestling in the last year.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. That's pretty awesome. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that match.
That match gets released this week.
Yeah? Wow.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Show. Yeah, they're releasing it for the night of the show you're going to. It's going to be out at the merch tables, Rob, that night. Pick it up.
Is it really?
Daniels and Shingo is out as well at the moment.
Yeah, and O'Reilly and Ricochet.
Yep, that's the one.
I heard that X-Pac was on that show.
X-Pac was on what show?
Yeah, he was at ringside for that, a match on that show, which I did not know. Someone told me about
the Evolve show?
I'm like, yeah, and I was like, no, he wasn't. And then I looked it up online, and it said it clear as day that he was. And I was like, oh, my God, I did not know this.
Like he was cornering someone?
He walked out during, I think, Ricochet O'Reilly to scout the new talent or something.
Huh.
I know. I thought that would have gotten
I hadn't heard a thing about that.
Yeah, because I guess people that went, no one talked about that show online too much. So I was like, well. And someone told me that, and I'm like, BS. I'm like, I just was around Sean Waltman, and I would have known about this. And, I was wrong.
I just listened to the Sean Waltman podcast with Cabana, the Cabana does. Great podcast, and he had Sean Waltman on, and it amazes me every time, because it's just whenever you hear like a Shima Zion, when you guys talk to him, when we had him on,
mm-hmm.
me and Rob, it's like it always amazes me when I hear a wrestler talk that's just such a huge like wrestling fan to the point that they like love like obscure stuff. And Sean Waltman was on this Cabana podcast, and he's just like he's talking about like Tadao Yasuda and stuff like that. And he's just like throwing out all this kind of crazy knowledge about Japan. And I just think to myself, wow, Sean Wallman is like all of a sudden like very high on the list of guys I would want to talk to from pro wrestling if I had like them spend an evening with them and just pick their brain.
When I hung out with him a month ago, Alan, he kept asking me if I had any Hamada UWF.
He's
talking about how awesome Grand Hamada was, and Perro Aguayo, and like Yato and Jado when they had their other names. Like, he's just
What was the name of the guy that Ultimo, when Ultimo didn't have his mask, was just Yoshihiro Asai? He faced this guy a bunch of times. I forget his name, and Dean uploaded a few of their matches. What was this?
Cecilia Savalhe?
No. I think he was a Lucha guy. I'll look it up here, but it's that Hamada UWF stuff. I haven't seen much of it, but it's awesome what I've seen.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't exist on, at least some of the stuff Waltman was in, I don't think exists, because he did a tour over there in like 92, I think. And he was talking about how it became Michinoku Pro. Like, he's like, you know, that's it. I was like, oh, yeah, Hamada's UWF. And then, like, we were talking about Global and Chaz and, like, stuff like that. Old Jerry Lynn stuff. Like, he's great. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he does seem like just a real nice, decent lad.
And we were hanging out in a casino, too. And, like, anyone that ever even walked up to him, he would go way out of his way to say hi and take pictures and, like, everything else. Like, he's not, like, such a, like, nothing went to his head is what I'm basically trying to say. He's really cool.
Yeah, actually, Alan, speaking of Waltman, that was a guy that Rob and I were talking about that, you know, that's a guy whose career needs to be put on a compilation, you know, that's something that we would consider doing something like that for.
Just and he had all these different runs that were very different to each other. Like the 1-2-3 Kid run was totally different than the X-Pac run and the 6 run where he was like the annoying heel of the NWO and just all this great different stuff that he did.
Agreed.
But
great.
I think there was a thing on YouTube, but like him and Razor watching back their match from the May 17th, 1993 Monday Night Raw, where Razor got pinned by by 1-2-3 Kid, and they were watching back the match like just on a laptop, like in like a cafe or something, and talking over it, and really really interesting to see kind of their thoughts on that match. And Razor, like, oh my god, what a great wrestling brain that guy had, just totally gone to waste, because you could even see him like just talking about the match there, like how smart he is about that. I think it's unbelievable.
My favorite part of that, he's like, sweet finish, dude.
Yeah.
Anytime I see, that's just so funny to me. Sweet finish. Totally Scott Hall.
Looks like something.
Any other topics you want to touch on, guys? Any other topics you want to touch on?
I think pretty much ran the gamut here. We've gotten all the topics in. We thank you again, Missy Hyatt, for doing the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks to Missy. It was fun. I enjoyed the interruption by the million dogs that arrived at our house. That was quite hilarious.
Well, I like that you have a client named Michael Hayes.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've been seriously, like, when... I walked up to this guy the other day and we were like introducing ourselves and I was like, hi, I'm Alan. He goes, hi, Michael Hayes. And I just was bursting out laughing. I was like, and he was like, what's wrong? I was like, oh no, it's all right. I'll explain to you later. And like later when he's down to us, I was like, hey, look at this video on YouTube. That's Michael Hayes. It's the most unprofessional shit ever. And he was like, oh my god, I've Google searched my name before and I've seen that guy come up, and I was like, yeah, I bet you have.
Tremendous.
Yeah, that's funny, man. But, well, Alan, thank you for giving us this vehicle to, you know, do the Missy Hyatt interview, you know.
No problem.
It was fun finally getting to talk to you, you know, live.
Have we not talked on Tim's show before? Maybe we haven't, actually.
I hung up and you came on right after, so.
Yeah. I talked to Dean. I need to talk to Dean again. That's one of my great, great treasures in life, is getting to talk to that man.
Awesome.
So well, yeah, thanks guys, and I'll talk to you again. We'll do another show with the three of us talking random stuff at some point in the future, I'm sure.
Sounds good, man.
I'll continue to bridge the gap between Rob's new stuff and Will's old stuff.
Yeah, that's what we need to do. We need to brainstorm old school guys and how they would have matches against Teddy Hart, you know, or something. You know, how would be Brian Blair fare against Teddy Hart or, you know, something along that nature. Coco Beware versus Jack Evans. You know, we'll do fantasy matches.
At the risk of extending the show again, do you know who I want to see, like, run the gamut of, like, wrestling old guys in their prime? Dolph Ziggler. Like, I want to see Dolph Ziggler against Coco Beware, Dolph Ziggler against just insert awesome Tito Santana, just any, like, awesome baby face from, like, the 80s or early 90s. I want to see him against Dolph. Because that guy is just, he is so underrated. He's awesome. Everything he does in the ring is good. His matches with Danielson, like, I know everyone's, like, talked about Danielson from those matches, and don't get me wrong, he was amazing. And the Dolph, there's a reason why those matches were way better than the matches Danielson's had with literally anyone else so far in WWE. It's because Dolph is fucking awesome.
You'll get no argument from me, and he also had a highlight with the Rey Mysterio feud last year, too. So,
oh, yeah. Their match at SummerSlam last year, their match at SummerSlam totally slept on. Just such a great match. I remember, like, that was kind of before I realized how good Dolph was, and we were just sitting there to watch his pay-per-view, and that comes out as the opener. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's probably just a pretty average match for Rey, and then they go out and have this fucking awesome, awesome match. Yeah, he's good.
Well, Alan, Rob's funny phone dropped off on us again, and I don't think he's going to come back on. So I think we'll end it
no
there,
problem.
And then we'll definitely brainstorm. You know, we'll keep communicating and reach out in correspondence, and we'll come up with some ideas for a future show. But I had a blast. So thank
cool.
you, and I want to thank everybody for listening to. This dual podcast of Dr. Keith's show with Alan Forel and the Goodwill Wrestling podcast with me and Naylor. So everybody, you know, keep listening. And once again, thanks to Missy Hyatt. We'll talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
Bye.